Oh, here we go. I'm in trouble now. Timmy. Hey, man.
Hey, how you going?
Good, how you doing?
Yeah, all right. Where are you?
Yeah, I'm not going to make it. I couldn't couldn't get the bike unlocked. I couldn't remember the bike lock code. And this helmet doesn't fit anymore. I'm sorry, dude. Are you right to do it by yourself?
So did you just go to lunch early? Is that basically what this
I'm here at the fish? Yeah, I'm here at the fish and chip shop. Thought I'd just get here, get a spot.
Well done, good plan, Williams.
Get the order in.
All right, fish cocktails, please. Say those scallops.
You got it. Thanks, man.
See ya.
See ya, bye. All right. He took that well. Timmy there out in the field. While I'm out in the field too, I guess. I'm here just waiting at the fish and chip shop because we're going to wrap things up very soon in the place where it all began. But first, one final ride.
Nicholas, wait up. Having a little pushy ride out on a nice dirt road with a man who's been on quite a journey.
Yeah.
Nicholas, where have you been?
I've been pretty much all over the heart of Australia. I started in Perth and I rode across the outback, and instead of doing it along the easiest way, I took the hardest possible one. So I went from Perth to Uluru, across the Great Central Road, then down the Stuart Highway to Port Augusta.
Straight down the middle of the country at that
Yes.
point. Right.
And from Port Augusta to Mildura, and then along the Murray River all the way to Albury, from where I got to Canberra, and from Canberra to Sydney.
West to East Coast on a bicycle, whatever way you do it, is nuts. Nicholas's zigzagging route added 2,000 extra kilometers to the trip. The result?
That's about 5,700 Ks. Yeah, in pretty much 56 days, so it's about 100 Ks a day.
Okay, I'm tired just thinking about it.
And you should be.
Why? Is obviously the first question. Turns out Nico had a goal in mind, and it's not far from the search of the real thing.
I cycled all the way here across the outback in order to truly get to know the essence of the country, I guess.
Nicholas Marino's been riding around the world the last 10 years. He's clocked almost 90,000 Ks in some of the world's wildest places. Cycling Australia was supposed to be the low-key bookend to his journey. What he didn't expect was for this country to push him. His adopted homeland had challenges in store.
It's wild. And it's funny because I never thought I would describe it like this.
Nicholas is originally from Argentina.
I had a pretty easy life, I guess. Typical middle-class Argentine family. We never had the excess, but we never lack anything.
He did lack one thing.
I didn't have a bike when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I did for a while, but it's not something that I did often.
So as a kid, it didn't necessarily speak to you a lot.
Not at all.
Most of my childhood on a push bike, but no, that's not the case for you.
No, especially Buenos Aires is not a safe place for cycling.
As a young adult, Nicholas got into travel.
Because I'm very, very curious.
At first, he was just an average backpacker.
4 months in Europe when I was 20. That would be just the beginning. You know, when I was backpacking, the 10 first traveling years of my life, I used to come across a lot of Australians on their sabbatical, on their gap year.
Right.
It's like, wow, these people, they're everywhere. They all travel in Australia. What fascinating people. They seem to be very open-minded, very open to experience, and that was really inspiring.
Nico worked just enough to fund the next low-budget backpacking trip. Pretty soon, a decade of that adventure lifestyle had passed.
I guess it's an evolution. You evolve.
Right.
By the time I was backpacking in Iran, I came across all these guys cycling from Europe, And I just found their stories so exciting, so interesting.
That was different to backpacking?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why is that?
It's night and day.
Two wheels seem to make conversation and hospitality easy to come by.
The bicycle, for me, is the perfect means to penetrate into a society, into a culture. There's always this element of sympathy or empathy. They see you struggling, you're dirty, you're tired, you're thin. It's not pity. So sometimes it is, actually. They look at me and they say, okay, boy, you do need help. When you're exposed, you always have to open yourself. You start discovering what a true human connection is.
So, Nicholas was no longer a backpacker.
I converted in a matter of a week.
But he hadn't ridden a bike since he was 12.
And I would fall, it was impossible to control.
These bikes, with all the gear and supplies, can weigh 70, even 115 kilos.
I fell 5 times in the first block in Tehran.
But in the middle of the city?
In the middle of the
everywhere.
City, very, very populated part of the city. And people just kept looking at me. It's like, what are you doing?
He didn't know it, but the journey toward Australia had begun.
You have to give everything of yourself if you decide to embark on something meaningful. And as your body becomes stronger and your bum adjusts to the saddle, then it becomes easier and the rewards are just too amazing.
In the coming years, Nicholas rode through Asia, Europe, Africa.
I rode across the Sahara twice. I slept with lions outside the tent in Namibia. I rode across the equatorial rainforest in Congo, Cameroon, Central African Republic. So I've been around.
He racked up the Ks, but that wasn't the point.
Freedom is the word. You feel liberated. You feel independent. You feel self-sufficient. You feel you can reach any single corner of the earth.
Right.
There's also the whole...
Goanna.
Wow.
I just saw a full goanna.
Wow, that was amazing.
That was unreal.
Yeah.
I've never seen a goanna in the wild,
no,
I can tell
neither.
You that much. Goanna crossing.
Take a shot.
Yeah.
One day, Nicholas was offered some work in Australia.
It was very exciting for me. I mean, I was finally coming to the country of the people that had originally inspired me.
But when he got here...
It was rather disappointing.
Ouch.
No, I loved it. But I realized how much I have idealized the image of the average Australian. I thought they would all be travelers. They would all be open-minded.
Australia wasn't jam-packed with free spirits, but Nicholas wanted in.
It's more like an egalitarian society, and the country works. The country actually works. When you come from a place that you're let die on the street because of bureaucracy, corruption, it's a very relieving experience.
If he wanted to stay, though, there was a catch, and it was a big one for a curious traveller.
I had to come here and settle for a while. That's the commitment you make when you apply for when you're granted the residency.
That meant this adventure cyclist chapter would be coming to an end, at least for now. He started thinking about his new home.
So if I'm going to speak about Australia, I really have to know what I'm talking about. How else am I going to know what a place is like if I don't experience it? I'm actually going to cycle across Australia. I want to get to know the country. I want to know what it's like, what it's really like.
Deep down, he wasn't excited to cycle such a developed part of the world.
I was coming from 2.5 years in Africa. The experience had been extremely intense. And you know you're not going to get something similar in Australia. I was a little unmotivated. And,
but you still felt you had to do it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The easiest road is the one that pays less. When you've been away for so long, the end is also scary. It is very, very, it's a very complicated time for the mind.
Nicholas wasn't that interested in riding as the crow flies. So yeah, he sketches out this 5,700 kilometer route. Even though he'd done it 100 times before, setting off was tougher than expected.
Leaving Perth was really, really hard, you know, in this easy country.
Right, good country, but
easy.
That's part of what makes it good, but...
Exactly. It's like a double-edged sword in many ways.
Primer día pedaleando en Australia. Camino al Outback.
Actually, not far from leaving Perth, even on the main road to Kalgoorlie, I realized, okay, this is something different.
He rode into deep WA.
You get this idea that Australia is the shining lights of the wealthy cities, so sophisticated and beautiful and tidy, but it's so not that. The total absence of electricity for hundreds of kilometers, isolated from any manifestation of civilization, you know? Something you don't get too often anywhere you are in the world, not even in the poorest countries. There's always a generator or something.
The lack of civilization also meant this early part of the trip had a major highlight.
The nights, hands down. You know, when the long and hard day is over and the sun starts to set in, it's like you can go walking on the Milky Way. It's just... And then generally in deserts, the perfect conditions for the perfect sleep. Like in the Great Central Road, I would sleep from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. straight.
Wow.
Sometimes I would wake up in the same position I fell asleep in. then you wake up and you can feel how your brain is so, it's ticklish. It feels so good.
A couple of weeks in, he was seeing fewer and fewer people as he pedaled on. Occasionally, he'd find that conversation and hospitality.
Especially the grey nomads, you know, the people who are retired and got a caravan. These people were incredible, giving me water. They would invite me for coffee, for dinner in their caravans. People were very, very gentle in that aspect.
He got the grey nomads beyond a free cuppa.
They do get a sense of what their country is like, and they have, what I like the most is that they truly love the country. I could feel they sensed it the same way I did.
The genuine attempts of these older Aussies to connect to their adopted homeland was encouraging.
They're not immigrants anymore, like they once were.
Of course, any trip into the outback doesn't hold much to 40, 50, 60,000 years of culture. This new Aussie was starting to get that too.
The real Australians, the ones who own this land, there are still so many things to solve in the future. And I'm taking part of this country, so
you're one of us.
Yeah, I'll do my best to make up for that.
On the Great Central Road, he hit a difficult stretch of terrain. It wasn't a mountain or a jungle. It was a clue for what he'd battle next.
The sense that you truly haven't got anywhere.
Before that, though, there was a literal milestone.
A la rocota de Uluru.
Uluru.
Wow, qué vista, eh?
But the spectacular sight was only a brief reprieve. This journey was proving harder than expected, and a bit annoying.
The day after I left Uluru, I don't know what happened in the environment, but all of a sudden, billions, literally billions of flies. You could almost swallow them while you were breathing. At sunset, there was this 1 hour that they would overlap with billions of mosquitoes. And you think, how can there be this vast amount of mosquitoes in the middle of the desert? Where do they come from? Where do they breed?
Nicholas had been at it for 20-something days, pedaling a 100-kilo-plus bike through thousands of k's now of raw Australia. He was riding south to Port Augusta, and things got tough.
Oh man, how can I describe that? For 1,000 kilometers, it's monotony at its best. And then I was facing these very strong headwinds
right all
day. So I was moving at a pace of about 8 kilometers an hour. And those are 8 kilometers an hour that...
They're not coming easy.
No, they're not coming easy. They grind you. They wear you out in ways that it really has an effect on your mind.
No hay nada atractivo alrededor. Madre mía.
There was no conversation and it was inhospitable. The experience started to amplify.
whatever move you make, it feels like deafening. At night, it's like you're in this void. It's so empty, so silent. It took solitude, and actually loneliness, to a different level.
Hoy volví a soñar con vos. Super intenso.
It became very difficult, to be honest with you. There were times that I thought I was going crazy. And it became very demanding for me to stay calm and not let my mind be carried away by thoughts. You start thinking about some things you've done in the past, some things you would have changed, or you're hungry and you want to eat, and there's nothing, and you're going to spend days without nothing, and you have no water, and you haven't taken a shower for 25 days.
You scream and no one's going to hear you.
Exactly, yeah. And you do scream. If you get angry, you get a puncture or something breaks, you really get angry. And you do it out in the open, because you know nobody's gonna hear.
It was one of those times that I said, if somebody stopped and would offer me a ride, I'd take it.
Right, if a grey nomad popped up at that moment.
Exactly, if they said, look, just jump on my truck, I can take you. I would have probably caved.
That's right, Nicholas was ready to chuck in the towel. Then he remembered something important.
If I was willing to take the easy way out every time I faced adversity, then I might as well not travel by bicycle at all.
Right.
Because it's not only about the easy part, you know. This is something not many people get. When somebody offers you a way out, an easy way out, you have to be so strong.
In Australia, the easy way is nearly always on offer. But its geography offers something else too.
You get to know yourself more than anywhere else, I think. You're constantly dealing with all your baggage. It pushed me, absolutely. And that's what struck me about Australia. You start looking into places that you've never looked into. Leave any city and in a matter of maybe a couple of hours, you can be on your own in the middle of nowhere. And you're exposed to what? To something external? No, you're exposed to yourself. And of course, if you're totally honest with yourself, which I try to be, you don't always like what you see. Guts don't look very, very beautiful sometimes. It's coming to terms with who you are to get to a place where you can start becoming better. I've been through processes like this constantly in the outback because the whole situation pushes you into it. You don't get that too often these days.
Estoy llegando finalmente a Port Augusta.
Making it south to Port Augusta was a feat.
Una puta mierda!
Nicholas chose the hard road and he got it. In his last 1,500 k's through some more green areas, he deepened his love for Aussie produce.
Go taste fruit in Europe. It's tasteless. You come here, you taste an apple, and it's an experience.
He admired self-sufficiency in regional Australia.
The will that many people in Australia have for doing things themselves, because they repair everything.
And rode part of the Flinders Ranges naked with some other adventure cyclists he met.
We rode the mileage each of us had on our asses.
Nicholas's last official leg was to Canberra. He hung out with a mate for a few days before riding up to Sydney to cross off west to east coast down at Bondi Beach. In his final kilometres coming into the ACT, Australia had one more gift to give.
I was attacked by a magpie and I fell right on the tarmac.
Me atacaron dos magpies. Ah, me pegaron el casco.
My head was like only a meter away from the 100 kilometers an hour traffic. Yeah, I really, really hurt myself.
Oh my God.
But other than that, I was really, really happy. Truth be told, the experience was overall a hard one. There were plenty of times, and I would dare to say maybe the majority, that I truly didn't enjoy at all.
No surprise, riding across Australia was pretty brutal, and it's not going to be for everyone. But taking something from Nico's approach to finding the real Australia, that is. Getting off the bike in Sydney was the end of a bigger journey, 90,000 k's worth.
I officially started a hiatus.
And after seeing the country and himself up this close, maybe it was a good thing.
You cannot eat and digest at the same time. And it's going to be a long digestion. The emotions are filled with a sense of achievement, but also a little bit of nostalgic, you know? And you have to balance your feelings a lot. Accept the life that's coming, and it takes a period of time.
Speaking of eating and digesting, where's the fish?
No, I'm bloody starving.
This is Mike and Timothy.
Oh, yeah.
Scallops.
They've been on a search celebrating the unique Australian character.
Mama, the ship's just still too hot.
They're still hungry, still mates, and still making a mess with tomato and tartar.
It's tartar, folks. Still think it's tartar.
But it's time to park the real thing van.
What's the word?
What is
it? An indefinite hiatus.
This is it. We're wrapping things up for the time being.
They should probably say thank you
to the amazing characters we've met, the long list of people who've helped at the ABC and beyond, and our endlessly forgiving wives.
But most of all, to you, our audience. You guys have been the real, real thing.
And so, as the sun peaked over the horizon and the fellas said tartare and ta-ta, the stories continued with Australians who live them every day.
I'm Mike Williams.
I'm Timothy Nicastri.
That's episode 36, and for now, the final episode of The Real Thing.
Thanks, old boy.
Thanks, man. Bring it in. Oh, bring it in.
Oh!